This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Iran urges the UN to prevent misuse of Resolution 2231, saying the ban on Tehran's arms exports expired in 2020. A survey finds that about 85% of people in Britain have to cut their food spending to save money as the cost of living continues to rise. And European Union leaders fail to find immediate practical solutions in order to grapple with the energy crisis caused by the war in Ukraine. Thank you for joining us. Iran says there is no legal ground to link a UN Security Council resolution endorsing the 2015 deal to allegations that Russia uses Iran-made drones in the Ukraine war. Iran's ambassador to the UN, Saeed Iravani, made the remarks in a letter to the Secretary General after Ukrainian officials called on the world body to inspect the downed drones in the country. Kiev accuses Tehran of violating UN Resolution 2231 by providing Russia with drones, a charge Tehran denies vehemently. Iravani rejected Kiev's allegations as unfounded and a misrepresentation of the UN resolution. He said an embargo on Iran's arms exports under the resolution was expired in October 2020. He also noted that the arms restrictions applied to the transfer of missile technology designed to be capable of carrying nuclear warheads. Iravani also called on the UN chief not to allow any abuse of the resolution for the sake of the war in Ukraine.
Iran has doubled down on its earlier stance that it has not supplied weapons to Russia to be used against Ukraine. Foreign ministry officials say those claims are untrue and based on false information. Tehran says the accusations are part of a propaganda campaign by the West to stoke tensions with Iran. The accusations against Iran have been leveled by Ukraine and its Western backers. They say Russia has been using Iranian-made drones to strike Ukrainian cities in recent weeks. The Kremlin has also roundly denied the accusation, saying it's using Russia-made weapons in its strikes. Also, some Western media outlets have cited U.S. security officials as saying that more Iranian drones as well as missiles are to be shipped to Russia. But the Pentagon says it cannot confirm those reports. However, it says it will take steps to make the sale of Iranian drones harder. Ukraine has also threatened to cut diplomatic ties with Iran. But Tehran says it holds a neutral stance and believes dialogue is the best way to end the war. Iran has invariably stressed the need for respect for various countries' sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity, including Ukraine, based on the principles of the United Nations Charter.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has taken a clear and consistent position on the situation in Ukraine, which has been pronounced since the start of the conflict. The Islamic Republic of Iran has always emphasized that all UN members must fully respect the purpose and principles enshrined in the United Nations Charter as well as applicable international law.
The accusations against Iran come amid intensifying tensions at war fronts in Ukraine. Citizens and pro-Russian officials are evacuating from the main city in Kherson region just as Ukrainian forces are pushing to take back the area from Russia. Over 60,000 people will be evacuated within the next 6 days.
Kiev and some of its Western backers accuse Iran of supplying Russia with Garand 2 drones. Ukraine claims Russia has acquired as many as 2,400 of the UAVs. The West accuses Iran of breaching a UN resolution that placed an arms embargo on Tehran. The embargo expired in 2020, despite Washington's efforts to renew the measure.
the anti-Iran claims first emerged in July. Back then, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan alleged that Washington had received, quote, information indicating that Iran was preparing to provide Russia with up to several hundred unmanned aerial vehicles, including weapons-capable UAVs, on an expedited timeline. Flying at low altitude, these unmanned aircraft can evade traditional air defense systems before dive bombing their targets. The distinctive delta wing design of the drones has led Ukrainian and Western officials to claim that they are Iranian Shahed 136 UAVs. Russia's use of the so-called kamikaze drones has sparked panic in Ukraine. The United States, Britain and France were planning to raise the claim during a closed-door UN Security Council meeting. They accuse Iran of violating a UN Security Council resolution that had placed an arms embargo on Iran. The arms embargo expired in 2020, despite the efforts of former US President Donald Trump to renew it.
Iran categorically rejected unfounded and unsubstantiated claims that Iran has transferred UAVs for the use of the conflict in Ukraine. It is recently disappointing that to pursue their political agenda, these states are trying to launch a disinformation campaign against Iran.
So, dear colleagues, today we have observed another round of the disinformation campaign from the Security Council by the Western delegations, as they raised in the Council the issue of the UAVs allegedly used by Russia in Ukraine. The aim of our Western colleagues is clear. They attempt to hit two targets at once, inventing an artificial pretext to put pressure on Russia and on Iran.
The accusations come amid continued NATO military support for Ukraine. The West is now under fire for fanning the flames of war by sending more and more military hardware there. It's now believed that the accusations made against Iran are part of a larger media campaign against the Islamic Republic. The West, led by the United States, were trying to pressurize Iran by supporting the rioters in Iran during the recent tensions. They imposed a series of sanctions on Iranian officials over human rights allegations. However, they failed to dictate their will on Iran.
Moving on, Tehran says the claims of Western countries to support Iranian women are not sincere and in good faith, stressing that Iranian women do not need guardians.
Iranian women are smart, well-educated, dedicated, and patriotic and are aware of their rights. They also understand how to engage with the government in a peaceful and constructive manner in order to advance their rights. Therefore, we advise those Western states that they are not required to act as guardians or caretakers of Iranian women or speak on their behalf.
Zahra Ershadi was speaking at a UN Security Council meeting on women, peace and security. She criticized some Western countries for what she called baseless allegations against the Islamic Republic under the pretext of supporting Iranian women. Ershadi denounced those allegations as attempts to politicize women's rights, adding that such claims are in line with double-standard approaches toward human rights. She noted that inhumane anti-Iran sanctions by the U.S. have violated the basic rights of Iranian women. Ershadi also pointed to the death of 22-year-old woman Mahsa Amini in mid-September, which sparked riots in Iran.
The tragic death of Mahsa Amini, a young Iranian girl, has broken the hearts of not only our government, but also the people of my country. We regret the incident and hope to never have to witness such a heartbreaking loss again. A thorough investigation was carried out to determine the circumstances that led to this tragic death. So far, the findings of two preliminary investigations have been shared with member states and UN-affiliated organizations.
Ershadi talked about the significant role of women in Iran's various domains. She said more than half of the population of Iranian university students are comprised of females. Ershadi said 73% of Iran's medical specialists are now made up of women. Israeli forces have killed yet another young Palestinian man during a raid in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin. The Palestinian victim has been identified as 19-year-old Salah Bariki, who died after being shot in the neck. Three other Palestinians were also wounded after regime forces stormed the center of Jenin and raided several buildings, firing live bullets. Israel has intensified its deadly crackdown against Palestinians across the occupied territories. More than 120 people have been killed in Israeli attacks so far this year. A new survey shows British consumers are cutting food spending to save money as the cost of living reaches new highs. The study conducted by the British Consumer Protection Association says about 85% of the people in the UK have cut their food spending since August. It also shows that people are trying to buy promotional foods and spend less on expensive items. People in the UK have been feeling the squeeze of soaring prices for months. Britain's inflation is now at a four-decade high. This is driven by inflated food and energy prices due to the crisis in Ukraine and sanctions on Russia. Britain has returned to rolling political crisis after the current Prime Minister, Liz Truss, announced her resignation Thursday afternoon. The ruling Conservative Party will now enter another leadership race just 44 days after Truss herself was elected to the role. Robert Carter reports from London to bring us the latest and what's going to happen going forward.
Britain has been thrown into another leadership crisis after outgoing Prime Minister Liz Truss announced her resignation after just 44 days in office. Her departure makes Truss the shortest-serving UK Prime Minister in British history and the fourth Tory to head the troubled nation in just 4 years.
I cannot deliver the mandate on which I was elected by the Conservative Party. I have therefore spoken to His Majesty the King to notify him that I am resigning as leader of the Conservative Party.
So now eyes turn towards who her successor will be. The ruling Conservative Party have chosen to ignore opposition calls for a general election.
This cannot continue. Britain deserves better. Britain cannot afford the chaos of the Conservatives anymore. We need a general election now.
The next Prime Minister is expected to be elected via another internal leadership race within the space of just 1 week. Speculation suggests that past leadership contenders Rishi Sunak and Penny Mordaunt both have their eye on the top job. Whilst current Chancellor Jeremy Hunt has ruled himself out of the race, former Prime Minister Boris Johnson has stunned many with rumours he may attempt a return. Truss's allies claim she stood aside graciously. However, critics believe she should be held accountable for her self-admitted mistakes. I'm
sorry. Liz Truss leaving after just 44 days in power really epitomises the state of the current Conservative Party. Because think about it, if after 12 years of power, yet another Conservative Prime Minister is chased out after being unable to clean up the mess that their party created, well, what does it say about any other potential leadership candidate?
Going forward, it's expected things are going to move very rapidly, with Tory MPs expected to put forward their nominations on Monday, with an election process concluded by Friday the 28th, and with a new Prime Minister in place in time for October the 31st's fiscal statement. However, it's surely going to take much more than a speedy election process to restore the nation's lost confidence in the ruling Conservative Party. Robert Carter, London.
European Union leaders have failed to find immediate practical solutions at their summit called to address an energy crisis fueled by the war in Ukraine. After lengthy talks in Brussels, the leaders failed to impose a price cap on gas to counter slash in supplies from Russia to the bloc. However, they agreed to keep working on a roadmap to contain energy prices for households and businesses. European Council President Charles Michel said the energy crisis represents a threat to the bloc's internal market. He said a maximal coordination was needed to address the issue. Before the summit, Germany refused to back calls for a cap on gas prices, but in a sign of concession, Berlin also agreed to work on mechanisms for containing prices. French President Emmanuel Macron, who had gone into the summit saying Germany was isolating itself, expressed satisfaction with the outcome of the meeting. Thousands of people in a small Italian coastal town staged a protest against the government's LNG regasification plant project. They fear the plant could endanger public safety and bring detriment to economic activities in the area.
On Wednesday, about 3,000 people took to the streets of west central Italy's town of Piombino to stage a rally against the outgoing government's plan to install a floating regasification terminal in the port. Italy has been struggling with increased energy costs as wholesale gas prices have surged to unprecedented levels across Europe since the start of the conflict in Ukraine, and a new regasification plant is part of a Mario Draghi executive's plan to ease the energy crisis. In an attempt to reduce its dependence on Russian gas, Italy has increased gas supplies from Algeria and opted to expand its regasification capacity. If the government gets the go-ahead on the regasification project, a floating storage unit would be placed in the small port of Piombino.
We are really concerned for the safety of our citizens, as the regasification plant will be placed only a few hundred metres away from homes and offices in a very busy and often rough sea. What if there is an accident or a fire breaks out? Furthermore, tens of tons of sodium hypochlorite will be dispersed at sea. It would be a disaster for tourism and fishing activities.
The floating storage unit would have a 5 billion cubic meter capacity, and according to the government's plan, it would be connected with the country's gas network by the spring of 2023, an event that is very unlikely to happen, according to experts. Italy has an annual consumption of about 75 billion cubic meters of gas. Of these, around 30 billion cubic meters used to come from Russia. People from Piombino have staunchly opposed the project for months, staging more than 30 protests in the span of 5 months.
Young people are struggling for their future, for our beautiful town. The government should have not thought of Piombino in the first place.
The outgoing government has also picked the city of Ravenna as a site for a second regasification plant, with construction works set to start in the first 4 months of 2023. A decision over the project in the port of Piombino could come as soon as Friday. Max Civili, Piombino.
That's a wrap for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The limelight. Despite the new government taking office in the United Kingdom, the economic conditions in this country have not improved, but have also worsened. Most people in this country are struggling with huge increases in energy prices and the cost of living. The very dire economic conditions have forced people to do things they don't want to do. They have been forced to reduce or even forgo their daily meals, and in order to feed their children, they should get help from food banks. Also, figures showed reports of energy theft have increased as Britons face rising electricity and gas bills. We've taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Independent has more. Economists warn Britain's economy is expected to shrink around 0.2% each quarter from October through to June of next year. The EY Item Club predicted in its autumn forecast this prolonged economic decline will result in a 0.3% fall in gross domestic product or GDP for 2023 as a whole. The Economic Forecasting Group has significantly downgraded its previous summer forecast, which estimated the economy would grow by 1% in 2023. A combination of high energy prices, surging inflation, rising interest rates, and global economic weakness have driven up the likelihood that the British economy will face a recession until the middle of next year. And as an economy enters a technical recession, given its GDP falls for two or more consecutive quarters. The government intervened in early September to put a ceiling on energy bills at £2,500 a year for the typical household, and has since pledged to cover a proportion of rocketing electricity costs for businesses as well. The move is supposedly set to ease the pressure on household incomes and prevent the collapse of businesses that would otherwise be unable to afford the mounting bills. Furthermore, EY said, once high inflation eases, the weaker pound boosts exports and the Bank of England's interest rate hikes end. Gross domestic product or GDP should return to growth in the second half of 2023. The economy is then expected to expand 2.4% in 2024 and 2.3% in 2025. But the group warned that there is a risk that growth could be dragged down by further economic shocks. Figures showed reports of energy theft have soared as Britons face rising bills for electricity and gas. With a cost of living crisis mounting, the number of reports made to the Crime Stoppers charity has almost trebled since 2017-2018, with a rise of more than 20% in just the past 6 months. The chair of an influential select committee of MPs warned the increase shows the desperation of households hit by rocketing electricity and gas prices. Electricity theft, which pushes up bills for customers, carries a maximum prison sentence of 5 years, while gas theft is also illegal. Crime Stoppers figures show 8,289 reports of energy theft in the United Kingdom in the year to the end of July, a rise from 2,876 reports in the 12 months ending July of 2018. In the 6 months to the end of July, there were 4,559 energy theft reports to Crime Stoppers in the United Kingdom, up from 3,730 in the 6 months before that, representing a 22% increase when comparing the two periods. Crime Stoppers is contracted by the non-profit Retail Energy Code Company to run the energy theft tip-off service, allowing people to anonymously make reports. The Retail Energy Code Company, or RECO's website explains, Crime Stoppers securely notify the tip-off to the relevant gas or electricity supplier for investigation. Additionally, energy fraud reports to trade body UK Revenue Protection Association increased by 54% in just 6 months, from 717 cases in 6 month period from July to December of 2021, up to 1,104 cases from January to June of this year. While police forces in England and Wales received nearly 3,600 reports of dishonest use of electricity in the year to March, up 13% year on year. The British newspaper The Guardian covers the same story from a different angle. New data showed millions of British people were forced to skip meals or go a whole day without eating in recent months. The Food Foundation charity said, as the UK's cost of living crisis deepened, nearly one in five low-income families experienced food insecurity in September, meaning more people went hungry than during the chaotic first weeks of the COVID lockdown. According to the Foundation's latest tracker, hunger levels have more than doubled since January, with nearly 10 million adults and 4 million children unable to eat regular meals last month, prompting calls for stronger measures to protect vulnerable households. These included demands for free school meals to be made available to an extra 800,000 children amid reports of hungry school kids stealing food from classmates, skipping lunch because they could not afford school meals, or bringing in packed lunches containing just a single slice of bread. Campaigners also condemned the government's refusal to rule out real-term cuts to benefits, which it is estimated would leave already struggling families hundreds of pounds a year worse off. The Foundation's tracker found more than half of universal credit claimants were struggling to get the food they needed. The leading public health expert, Sir Michael Marmot, called the rise in hunger alarming and said it would have damaging health consequences for societies worst off, including increased occurrences of stress, mental illness, obesity, diabetes and heart disease. A separate survey of primary schools by chefs in schools found half were providing a free meal for children in poverty who were ineligible for free school meals. Over two-thirds were referring parents to food banks, and just under 50% were offering food parcels for families themselves. The charity's chief executive, Naomi Duncan, said, "This research reveals the shocking reality that teachers see on a daily basis." Naomi Duncan added, "The situation is appalling and getting so much worse. We call on the government to urgently extend eligibility for free school meals to all families receiving universal credit so that support reaches the kids who need it most." The growth in food insecurity has accompanied the shrinking spending power of low-income families because by static wages and benefit cuts in recent years. Faced with heat or eat choices, they have often opted to rein in food spending, although the recent squeeze has left some households too poor to afford either. Food insecurity is a relatively new formal metric designed to gauge the numbers of people who struggle to get the food they need because of lack of money or access. It has been formally adopted by the UK Food Standards Agency, which warned in June that increasing poverty meant food insecurity was escalating rapidly. Since January, rising food and energy bills coupled with the removal of COVID support has precipitated a sharp rise in hunger in Britain. More than two-thirds of food insecure families said they cooked less or turned off fridges to cut energy costs.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
In this edition of The Spotlight, we'll look at how and what went so wrong for Prime Minister Liz Truss and her so-called mini-budget, with calls ringing louder for her resignation, and whether there's a lifeline for the UK economy or not. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Historian and journalist Tony Gosselin joins us from London. Also joining us is President at the European Institute for International Law, Mahmoud Rafat, who joins us from Stockholm.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Tony Gosselin, I'll first start with you. Basically, let's find out from you what is your explanation behind what is going on, especially when it comes to this mini budget, which is now turned out to be a real crisis for Liz Truss and her premiership.
Well, I think there's a certain degree of sabotage going on within the British economy. We had a whole month during September where there was a leadership contest between Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss, and the promise that Truss gave to all of those Conservative Party members was, "I will reduce your taxes." Well, of course, they just were thinking with their wallets and voted for her. The trouble is that actually there is nowhere that she could reduce taxes at all, really, because the markets have reacted in the way that the only way they could, which is to say, well, if you're going to reduce taxes, that means that the government borrowing, it cannot be paid back, and therefore we're going to have to, really, I suppose, punish you and tell you that we want the government to be able to pay its debts, and that's what they've done. The markets have punished them. They've said if you're going to be cutting taxes, you're not going to be able to fulfil your budgetary needs in paying all these debts back. The fact is, the only place where at the moment where Truss and the government can actually get enough tax in is from the super rich, and these are the one group of people and the most powerful businesses. The businesses are very good at not paying tax, by the way, but the super rich, as they get paid income in Britain, they have to, it's very easy to take that tax off them, and she was going to cut that. So I mean, it was a disastrous policy from the start, just built on greed from the Conservative Party members voting for her. But as I said, I think there's an element of sabotage here. There are some powerful influences out there that do want to see economies crash. We've seen it in many other countries around the world. Okay. Argentina, I mean, the list goes on. And what happens is, as those economies start to crash, because most people think, well, you don't want that to happen, but some people do want that to happen, is they are then able to buy up all those assets for very little money and make an absolute fortune. We're talking about the people like George Soros, international dealers and traders that can make a fortune on a crash. This is the trouble, is the international markets, particularly those centred in the EU and in London, in the city, and in Wall Street, are basically like a casino. And so games are played, and that's what's been happening. And Liz Truss has completely lost touch with reality. This Chancellor... what they were doing is they were trying to do things which just had no economic sense to them whatsoever. And so I think now Kwarteng has gone, Liz Truss is going to have to go very soon because she backed him all the way. And the Conservative Party is going to have to find a new leader.
Well, we're going to get to those topics, especially the one that you said that there's maybe sabotage going on. But Mahmoud Rafat, if you can tell us in layman terms, what was so wrong with this mini budget that caused such a crisis, which has put into question the credibility of Liz Truss and her administration as a whole?
Well, which is appearing for us is the taxes problem and the bad plan which was put by the government of Truss and especially to apply the same taxes on rich and poor, which represents a big contradiction with the social justice and also with the logic. But let's say, or let me repeat, this is what is appearing. Prime Minister Truss carried the heritage of long history of bad politics and also big messy. Don't forget, the Brexit is one of elements we can say not endamaged, but somehow broke big part of the British economy. Let's say also the markets in UK are not stable at all because of the big potentiality of the independence of Scotland next year, which will be followed for sure by independence of North Ireland. There is lots of elements she carried them as a heritage, or this government carried them, but she did not work on solving one of these dark elements. On the contrary, her government put a catastrophic plan, especially economic plan. Also, the involvement in UK strongly in the Russian-Ukrainian war was supporting one side, not only economically or militarily, but strategically. That's putting the UK economy in the same package or the same pocket of the war. And when there are wars, we always see investors do not trust so much in such economy. There is big trust used to be in the French economy, which we no longer find today, because of lots of elements she did not create, but she aggravated the situation by the tax cutting.
Well, let's get into what the Institute of Fiscal Studies has said here, Tony Gosling, because basically they pretty much hit the target when they talked about this mini budget. They called into question in terms of where the money was going to come from. And that was about, £60 billion that the UK will need in spending cuts. It said that unfunded tax cuts need to create that money. But how will the UK economy be able to do that? Of course, we know in the books they have forecasted a certain percentage of growth. I think it was 2.5%. But they said at best 0.7 or 0.8% is how much the UK economy is going to grow. So that's a blatant piece of fact that's out there. How did Liz Truss and her former Exchequer plan to convince people of that, which at this point is a void now?
I don't think they'd thought it through at all. I think that they had basically taken a few lines from an advertising agency in order to get themselves into power, get themselves elected in the election campaign over the summer. But they hadn't actually thought about what the implications might be. Look, let me just spell out a couple of basics here, because there is this thing called quantitative easing or printing money that the Bank of England's been doing. It's been using that money that it's created to purchase government bonds this week. It's just decided yesterday it's going to stop doing that, apparently, which means on Monday when the market's open, God only knows what's going to happen. We could have all sorts of problems with pensions. House prices could tank, mortgage rates going up. You know, this is becoming much more expensive for ordinary people. What should really happen with the money the Bank of England are making it up is they should just gift it to people who are on benefits, people who are on low pay, people that can't afford to buy food, are having to go to food banks. Give it to them. Give each one of those people who are having to claim government subsidies or Social Security or whatever £2,000, because you know what? They'll spend the money, and that will help all other elements of the economy. Because the way that they're spending this money at the moment is just going into the pockets of the people who have shares, and it's going in for asset purchases, and it's going to the rich, basically. So give that money, Bank of England, to the poor, and you'll see the economy start to pick up. So that's a really basic thing to understand. I mean, what we've had is, you're right, lots of instability. July, the Chancellor was Rishi Sunak. August, the Chancellor was Nadeem Zahawi. September, the Chancellor was Kwasi Kwarteng. And now in October, we've got another Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt. It gives the impression the Conservative Party haven't got a clue what they're doing.
Exactly.
And it's very unlikely that they will come up with policies now which will help the poorer people, which is the actually, it's the poor are the only ones who will actually managed to pick the economy up, I think, and get it moving again.
Well, you touched on a very important point there. And Mahmoud Rafat, just plain logic dictates when you have a position such as that, finance minister or the exchequer, have different people fill that position three times now, and you have the fourth person come into the picture, Hunt, who has varied jobs in the past that don't exactly constitute to him being an expert on finances in a country, I'm guessing. A sign of disarray. And then furthermore, a certain amount of time has passed in a very crucial period of time you're rocked by so many different economic factors. How can, after all these people to have come and gone, for there to be a promise of stability in the economic life of Britain, so to speak?
Well, let's say it's not questions only of experts. Always the economy is a follower to politics, and policies impact the economy and the functioning of the economy in any country over the world, whatever to be the degree of democracy of this country or this nation. The question is, and matters not left completely to experts' opinions. No, the politicians and decision makers who are not experts financially intervenes in lots of matters, and also their policies they put damage lots of plans put by experts, and this is which explains also the bad politics, especially last decades, especially last one decade. And the policies were adopted by politicians in UK were completely, in lots of situations, wrong politics and wrong policies, which led today to this heritage I was talking about a few minutes ago. Madame Truss has carried when she entered Downing Street. While, again, the question is not only one reason. We have lots of reasons. United Kingdom has been accumulating lots of reasons to drop down today. It's not something happened last week or last month. It's bad policies, bad interventions in some areas of the world.
Far back would you go with that?
Well, let's just have a look what happened in the Middle East last decade and the UK intervention in last decade. UK did not intervene rationally as all as its history, comparing to its history of intervention. Its old colonial empireship should have big experience how to intervene and how to act when there are conflicts, while we found the UK intervening completely wrongly since 2003, even before that, since the Iraq War.
I just want to get an idea about the time frame that you were talking about. I'm sorry to jump in because I want to now ask that question from you, Tony Gosselin. Our guest there talked about a decade, but then he went back all the way to 2003. Tell us if you think that this is something that's either been in the making for quite some time or something that the UK maybe never really recovered from based on the 2008 financial crisis. If you want to take a look at the origins of, wrong policies or what have you.
Well, I can be absolutely precise and say, really, the origin of this is 1976. That is the removal of Harold Wilson, who was the Prime Minister, by the army in Britain and the far right and the right-wing army in Britain. They kicked him out of office and replaced him with James Callaghan. Anyone that doesn't know about this, there are some very good books on it. The Enemy Within, I think, is one of them. And The Wilson Plot is another one. Very interesting the way he was got, because he was managing the economy for the Labour Party, for the British people. And ever since then, we've had then, of course, the Thatcher era began in the 1980s. And that, I think, is actually the start of finance capitalism getting a grip on Britain. That is to say, everything is privatised bit by bit. I mean, Thatcher, it was like every 2 or 3 months, another major state-owned industry was sold off to the international markets. And that meant that anybody in the world with a lot of money could just buy up British infrastructure. This was a beginning of the end, in a way, and what they called at the time Thatcher selling off the family silver. So now finance capitalism, whatever it is, 40 years later, has become absolutely king. Finance capitalism dictates the policies to prime ministers at Chequers at their private residence. Finance capitalism dictates which broadcasters are owned by who. And so the two main organs that the public have got to defend them from voracious, rich, acquisitive people, that is to say, a democratic parliament right. and the press, are both taken over by finance capitalists. And that's happened with the opposition Labour Party too here in the UK, where we've got a so-called opposition party which doesn't even support ordinary workers around the country, as we're getting lots of strikes starting in Britain now, even keep with their wages, keeping pace with inflation. Now, if the Labour Party can't even support that, they're clearly working, just as the Conservatives are, for the finance capitalists, for the City of London. And what we really need is a mixed economy where we have a government that asserts its strength, controls its infrastructure, and makes sure the poorest and the most or the least well-off in the country are looked after, as well as the super-rich. This government, and actually the opposition Labour Party, really only care about the super-rich that pay their wages for their political parties now.
I'm going to get back to that point, see if I can add something to that to challenge you. But, okay, we got about 5 minutes left, max. Mahmoud Rafat. So here we are, and here is the UK, and here's what they're dealing with. How are they going to move forward? What do they have in mind in terms of what anything that points towards some kind of recovery from what's happened? I mean, you have Jeremy Hunt that has come forward, and he has again made a U-turn. I lost count on how many U-turns have been made from the beginning of this. Two were cited. I think I counted five based on what Jeremy Hunt has also said. But how can the UK move forward based on your analysis to come out of this situation and for there to be some stability there?
Well, I don't think there is a magic solution. It's not a bottom we will hit. We will find a solution for the economy and we will get back the economic stability and the purchase power will get back affordable by society. I don't think that will happen in the close future. In particular, I'm repeating again, the question of the referendum of Scotland, it will be a big and huge earthquake if the Supreme Court of the UK accepted the case and Scottish went to referendum, the big chance is to vote yes. And that will represent earthquake, not only for the economy, by the way, but on the whole life of the United Kingdom. But, well, simply, this nation will not exist anymore. United Kingdom will not be the United Kingdom anymore, or the Great Britain anymore. It will be England. So there is no quick solution. There are some suggestions to be adopted on a very long term. When I say long term, it's not one decade. It's around between 2 to 5 years in order to get some stability. But that will not be, we will never be able to start on that until the decision of the Supreme Court concerning Scotland, and if yes, to see the vote results and what will happen after this result, to start from there, from 2023, when the shape of the relationship between Scotland and UK has been appeared. At that time, we will be able to start some procedures and to give the case and the files really to the experts without interventions of politicians.
Well, you have to have a stable government to do that. And you talked about the Labour Party there, and you, Tony Gosling, and you talked about how there should be a mixed, I forgot the term that you used.
Yeah, mixed economy.
But the Labour Party says that the Tories have they've lost the right to govern. And they're saying that the Conservative Party is just going to try to cling to power. And if it does that, it's going to bring down the country with it. What other options does UK have then?
Well, look, do you want Tony Blair back? I mean, because Starmer is even more extreme than Tony Blair. So he also has lost the right to govern. No, I think there are some very simple, quick solutions, but these are actually taboo. But the simple, quick solution, number one, is what I said before, is the people's quantitative easing. That is to say, printing money and giving it to the poor in order to kickstart the economy, you know, maybe even give £10,000 to everybody with no savings. A very simple thing that they could be doing, and that would be a fraction of the money that the Bank of England have been giving to the rich over the last, well, isn't it now 15 years, is it nearly, that they've been, well, no, not quite, but a long time anyway. So the people's QE, give that to poor people. The other thing they can do is they can regulate the nationalised, the privatised industries, all of the infrastructure, the railways, the electricity, the water, the gas. They can just restrict that, and they can renationalise it for free. And once the government is able to set the prices properly so that the there's no racketeering going on in the infrastructure, everybody will be able to get on and make some money. So there's two very basic things. Another one, of course, is the bankers that were responsible for the, okay, what we call the banksters for the financial crisis. Sure. The criminal bankers, they must be arrested and put in jail. I think those three measures would make a tremendous amount of difference and put the British economy back on track again.
With that, we come to an end, unfortunately, of this edition of The Spotlight. I'd like to thank Tony Gosling, historian and journalist, and also like to thank Mahmoud Rafat, president of the European Institute for International Law. That does it for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Vitaly and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners of IRB English Radio, welcome to another episode of Back to Reality. Well, I am Asma, your humble host. This is another time that I have the honor to be your humble host. Here with me, I have two very dear guests.
Assalamu alaikum. I am Rita, and you know, I'm really honored with this pleasure to be here at your service. I am a medical student in Iran. Yeah.
And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear friends. I'm Zainab Sadat, and it's quite a pleasure to be here today. Mm-hmm. I have my MA in TFL, teaching English as a foreign language.
Well, guys, there is this topic which is very much interesting. And ever since we're children, we're so much attracted to know more about it. When we are kiddos, we think that all those people who talk about the future, who can tell the future actually, are magicians. Mm-hmm. And as mm-hmm. we grow older, we start to learn that it's not just about magic, it's more than that. There are people, they could just talk about things that have never happened and there are yet years for them to happen. But still, there are people who have the ability who could talk about those issues and tell you about the things that would happen to you in the future, which is very much interesting. And everyone comes to you. But those people who could read the palms, mm-hmm. you know, that has always been something interesting. There are some people who could do that in the parks as well.
Yeah, I'm not interested in those kind of person. You know,
yes,
I always tell them and just I want to tell bad words when I see them.
It is interesting, but sometimes you
thing
have
is,
to...
You know, my mind yourself. Just don't want to accept it.
Okay, Vita is not like the kind of person who would love to know about her future, but I was a kind of a person, mm-hmm. and still I am, mm-hmm. when someone comes to me and tells me that I could read your future, I could do this and that. It's at least interesting.
But it's scary, you know?
Yeah, it's
knowing
scary,
your future
or
something.
It's interesting, and you know that you must not enter into that world.
Exactly.
Vita, it took me time to understand that it's scary to know about your future, and it's not always a good thing to know about your future. You know, there was this movie, which was very much interesting. The woman, all of a sudden, got this talent of knowing about the future of everyone. And then it turned out to be a horrible thing that happened to her. It's scary to know about your future, but still there are many people all around the world who would do too much to get to know about their future, as if it's something very much interesting.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, this story always made me think about a question that there is a paradoxical, content between, future is made or we're going to make it. You know, what is
so
the story?
You have the problem.
So if there is a future telling or something like that, it means that, okay, there is a future that it cannot change it.
Mm-hmm. Today, we're just going to talk about fortune tellers and how they do it, why it happens to some people that they have this ability to tell the future of other people.
And even the religious area of this matter that we have in our history, that it happened a lot.
So after a short break, we're going to come back and talk about how it happens. It's something very much interesting,
what
guys.
What a big cliffhanger you are.
Yes. So let's go for a short break and I'll be back in no time. Thank you for staying tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Welcome back, dear listeners of Back to Reality. In here, we're talking about something very much enchanting. And as kids and maybe as youngsters, we are so much interested in these sort of topics. Someone to come to us and tell us our future is going to be at least something that would give you some sort of, oh, I want to know that.
It's somehow related to the sixth sense. You know, in lower levels, there are some people that we have all visited around us who have a strong sixth sense.
Yeah.
For example, they see that I don't feel good about this travel.
Yeah.
I don't feel good about this person or this type of things.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that these are quite natural. There are some
people. These are very much natural things. We can even do that. But there are some people.
No. Some people as small, not ordinary people. For example, 1 in 20.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there are some people who get the feeling before anyone could feel that. But the higher level goes to those people who do some external acts in order to learn about the future.
Yeah.
They
and the black
connect
magic.
With the, yes, they yes. connect with the supernatural.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
With the genes.
Yes, with devils even.
Yeah.
I heard very terrible things about these people.
Yeah, it has always been something very much enchanting and at the same time very much horrible and dangerous. And it makes you terrified.
right. They do very strange in yeah. order to get connected to those supernatural creatures.
Yes, Bita, what are yes. your ideas?
You know what? Supporting the ideas of Zainab, and I want to tell you that there is, first of all, there is a difference between prediction and this fortune telling.
Yeah.
For example, I know someone who is a psychologist, and he is amazing. You know, he will wonder you because he's
That's
like.
Interesting.